Yes, the 13th of January 2014. Happy birthday, Rita. She'll never hear it, but anyway, never mind, my dear soul sister. So today, welcome to Journeys with JP on Revolution Radio, simulcast with Wolf Spirit Radio and No Borders Radio and NeverBeyond.info. My guest today is having a trouble connecting. Let me just try and call her again. My guest today is Jill Mattson, and we're going to be talking some really interesting stuff. Things that came out of the ancient teachings and things that come out of modern science and modern teachings bring together a whole health attitude and healing using the power of frequency. I'm just trying to get hold of her. And basically, anybody who heard my show last week with Shari Edwards will know about the use of frequency in sound, the use of healing, and discovering that, you know, it's more than just, you know, just playing a couple of tunes to someone that will make them feel better. This is actually changing the structure of their reality, and their beingness using sound, which we discover is in fact the driving force, the thing that does the creation in the first place. So, until I can get hold of Jill, I don't know where she's gone. I was speaking about 10 minutes ago. We were calling. We got a good audio as well. But she, like myself, is in the middle of the country, and presumably a feather fell off a tree and the phone line went down. Things happen like that. So, welcome to everybody. Skype. Just got a message from Dave saying Skype sucks. Well, you know, it's good. It's good up to a point. But then there are times when it does indeed, as you say, suck. I'll say some more in terms of hopefully what we'll be talking about today. I've always had my doubts. So we are looking at today we'll be looking at the use of sound through history, what has been taught in ancient times. We'll go back, hopefully. We'll go back and look for some write this is ridiculous. Right, I don't seem to get hung up. Let's try that one again. She seems to be online and just not responding. Ah, Jill, you're there. Okay, so you picked up the call and I still can't hear you.
Can you hear me now?
I can indeed. Right. Could you come closer to the mic or turn the volume on the mic up?
How's that? Is that better?
Getting better. Another sort of extra notch of that would be great.
How's that?
Perfect.
Lovely. Okay.
All right. So, wonderful. Welcome, Jill Mattson, to Journeys with JP. I've just given them a bit of a background about what our topics might be. Now we've got your audio sorted out. We can get it going. Welcome, once again. So, do you want to tell us where you started with this? I mean, was it something that you have always been interested in? Did you have, you know, were in a school play and you did the Greek thing and you thought, oh, there's something about this? Or, you know, what was the first spark? What kind of got you fired up about it?
Okay. I was, in my earlier days, a very conservative Christian, and I was very sincere, and I believed that every word in the Bible was true.
Jill, and could you just, sorry, Jill, could you come just a little bit back off the mic? Sorry.
Is that better?
Okay. Yeah, that's better. Okay.
Okay. So anyway, as I was very sincerely and believing in conservative Christianity, anyway, I started to write a book. I was writing an autobiography of God, thinking that it would look different from God's point of view. You know, we could say, how could God let a child starve? Yet, you know, there's enough food on this earth to feed everybody three times over. God could say, why don't you share? So I went on this kind of personal quest, journey, and started to rewrite the Old Testament. And I was shocked. I mean, God was moody, cranky. He had PMS. He was downright nasty at times. And I had an epiphany, and it was that if God was nasty, that was not a God that I was going to have anything to do with. And that whenever I heard any religious, from any type or any religion telling me, that it's okay to hate someone or whatever, that I was going to reject it. And for me, this was a very big, change. And I became psychic on a dime. I was clairvoyant, clairaudient. Everything opened up. And, I forgot to mention, I have been a passionate musician since about 5. So anyway.
All right, what did you play?
Piano and violin.
Ah, yes. my favorites. Anyway, go.
Beautiful. So anyway, I had spent a year working on this book, and it was kind of hard to just trash it or to think I spent a whole year just to change my mind. So I said, it's got to be another Bible. And I know that the Jews were in, you know, they were separated, and there was a serpentine Bible, and then that I found that, which was way different. And then I got into the Kabbalah, which I loved because it showed all these great ways of, you know, strengthening your communication and contact with God and godly beings, whatever that is. And quickly, the Kabbalah led me to Samaria and the Babylonians. And their stuff is real old. It's hard to say how old because everybody has given different time frames. You know, some, when you get online and look at some books, they'll say it's 10,000 BC. Well, gosh, that's the end of the Ice Age. And then some will say, no, it's only 1,000. But there's this, it's old. It's old. It's quite older than the Egyptian. And it's just as impressive. And from there, I went to the Chinese. And as I started searching these mystic documents, secret societies, mystery schools, I would always write stuff just about music because I just love music. And by the time I got done this quest, 25 years later, I had stacks of stuff. And a whole new way of viewing the world came in. In ancient times, when we read their writings, we don't understand what they're saying. And foolishly we say, oh, they're just primitive. Nuh-uh. They two things. One is that they have a way of viewing the world in terms of energy. They wouldn't call it that. They would call it sound or music of the spheres. But they see everything in terms of like sound waves, like the crest and the low part coming together and how sound waves interact. And that if you can figure out how sound works, then you can figure out how everything works because it's nothing but waves.
Exactly. It's all a wave. Talking of waves, would you mind just coming back or putting the microphone back a couple of inches?
Is that better?
Yeah, it's just that we're getting breath into it. You need a pop shield.
Okay.
Yeah. Anyway, go on.
Okay, so would be one thing, and then the other thing I learned when I was reading this stuff, and you get really back into the old stuff, these people. Weren't quite like us. You know, perhaps they weren't Homo sapiens, you know, who knows. They, from the stories and from channelings, but a lot of it written stories coming somewhat out of Central America and other sources, they were etheric. They communicated with telepathy. There were some giants. Some of them were bigger. There were brothers from the stars. There was... A whole different way of being. Since they were communicating through telepathy, there really wasn't much need to have a language. So you know, if you ever share a feeling with someone and you know exactly what that feeling is, that's really accurate. In a word, is kind of clumsy in comparison. So they weren't using sound for words, and for music of the spheres, I mean, they were listening to celestial vibrations from some other realm. So when I first started noticing the really cool things they were doing about sound, because that's my thing, sound healing, it was for very practical purposes. So I would think, like, you know, sound is a jackhammer, you know, it's a tool to get something done.
Exactly.
And you know, we don't think of going to the toolbox using sound waves. We think of sound as entertainment, and that's a dangerous thought. But anyway, back to these old guys. They were using sound for things like agriculture. And I know, gosh, maybe 70, 80 years ago, would be Rudolf Steiner. He was into these old mystery schools as well, the same veins of information that I spent my life, dipping into. And he comes up with broadcasts for, agriculture. So I think his organization is called Quantum Agriculture. And you can go and purchase broadcasts to, accelerate your plant growth, to get rid of pests, without any, pollution. And then there's another man, a current living man. His name is Joel Sternheimer. He's French, though he studied, I believe, in Princeton in the United States. Anyway, what he did was, he got, I think this is how he did it. He was able to look at, the cells of proteins of plants. Now you gotta remember, proteins are like the builder of the plant. And if you can imagine a cell, I know, I've seen pictures of them, they look like a jellyfish, like big blob breathing in and out. And if you measure how much that blob breathes in and out, then with a little math, you can figure out what's the frequency and what's the sound created by that vibration. So then he would just calculate that, and he would do that for the amino acids and proteins. And then he found out that when he put those sounds together, they were songs. Like, one of them was O Solo Mio. So plants, when you look their proteins, it's a song. And when he played the plant song back to the plant, he got 250% plant growth. And then if you sunk it different, because you know the high part of a wave, when it combines with another high part of a sound wave, they get twice as big. I mean, it's real simple. High part and the low part combine at the same time, and they cancel each other out. So then he was also experimenting with pests and blights, and he would do it just by doing the low part of the wave. And then there's another man in California in the United States, and his name is Dan. Oh, gosh, I'm blanking on it, but his company is called Sonic Bloom. Dan Carlson.
Sonic Bloom, I like it.
Yeah, what he noted was that plants absorb their frequency, like 90% of it, during dawn. And what he found that triggers the plant, it's not the light, it was the sound of the birds at dawn. So it was the vibrations, it was the sound that triggered the plant to open up and absorb and use nutrients. So he sells bird chirps. He gives you a CD with bird chirps and nutrients. And he's also getting like 250% plant growth. And so this is the kind of stuff that the ancient Lemurians and Atlanteans were into. They were using sound to make their garden grow. And, you know, I know there's lots of studies that show how classical music will increase the growth of plants. And so they were making an art of that. They were tuning into the consciousness, to the energy of the plant, and asking what it needed. Another one of their techniques
also, there's also wind chimes, which are these little tinkly things that blow in the wind that make sounds in your garden. So what you're saying is that having high frequencies, high audio frequencies, twittered tweeted through your garden will make your flowers grow by making the plants imagine that there are hundreds more birds than there are.
Yes, yes.
And is it because the plants are growing to make the food for the birds, or what do you know what the relationship might be?
No, I don't know that one. But there was many ways of doing it. They would do dances around their new seeds. The Egyptians did this as well.
Yeah, they're walking the bands or something.
Yeah.
They do that. They've been doing this here, actually. I've actually come across this, some of these techniques. There is a, we have a Steiner school here in the local area. And my children went there. And my girlfriend's children went there and all these things. We do things like the biodynamic dust by grinding rock dust, and also walking the bounds of the fields and banging drums and things like that.
Yes, that's exactly what these ancient people were doing. Exactly. And what they were doing with the newly planted seeds was they were shaking them, they were vibrating them so that they would germinate quicker.
Ah, is that the origin of the maracas?
I don't know.
Maybe that's what it is. You know, you put them inside a gourd and you shake them about, you make music with them, and then you plant them. Maybe that's an idea. I've got some old maracas that break, because the thing about maracas is that the joint goes, and you know, you've shaken them a bit and people have banged them against things, and then eventually the joint goes and they spray all their seeds everywhere. So it may be a reason for that.
Yeah. So anyway, as I went through these different ages, my eyes were just opened that sound was used for lifting rocks, for health, for warfare, for enlightenment, for contacting beings, and I was just in love. So I've been writing about that, and I've been using these techniques in my own music and CDs so that you can bring it back, you know, just real quick for a listen. You can start to benefit from these really ancient, cool things that we're just beginning to learn.
Awesome. So you gathered a lot of the information in your early years. And it's like you just did it because you liked it, but now you're realizing why you liked it. Mm-hmm. So your higher purpose is cutting in here. When did you first start talking to that aspect of you?
I guess about 10 years ago, I started to write music, which is really easy for me. I just sat down and did it. And so I started to compose, and then I started to perform and play the different parts. And then I started to use many of the techniques into my music. Now, one thing I did note was that different eras, well, let me go back even further. I came up with a theory with all of this research, and that was that we evolved into matter. Just as there's a theory of evolution with Darwin about how matter evolves, I believe that there's also a theory of involution of how spirit, a very subtle fine energy, gets embedded with, contacted with matter, like our soul, how our soul comes in here, or how feelings mature and evolve over time. And what I perceived was that originally the beings were very kind of ghostly, I don't know, think of Casper the Ghost, and thin and very much connected with the universe, definitely not as individualized as we are. And I believe it was the music of the culture, because unlike today, in almost any country you were in, they had a very stylized type of music, and that's all you heard. No radio, no free concerts. So like if you're in China, you listen to Chinese music. That's it. And the Chinese music, for example, would be constructed of, it would, if you were to convert the sound to shapes, it would be a very specific sacred geometry. It would be very specific matrix, and it would, by science law, it's going to vibrate your feelings and your thoughts. And I believe that that produced the predominant feeling and thoughts of the era, and it produced their strengths, and it also produces their challenges. So that to me, the music of each age was directly related to their what the lessons that they learned and their achievements and their trials. And it's almost like a rainbow when you look at the music, or if you were to paint it with colors, which would just be an octave of sound. It's like, you know, ancient Chinese was learning one set of lessons, and then like maybe says that you could equate to the color red or action or, you know, or balance or this or that. And then you can go into the next society who's got a different type of music, very different type of music, and then they're learning different things. Like the Egyptians would learn about knowledge. The Greeks were into beauty. The Romans were into power. And I believe that it was the music that created these predominant feelings, and that the music kind of unfolded. Think of a rainbow. And that, so as time went on, if you could think about involving or incarnating into different cultures, that you would have a chance to learn all the lessons, all the feelings, all the learn all of the rays or the information in the rays throughout time. And once you're embedded in a culture's music, like, you know, the Egyptians 3,000 years, if you're used to their music and then you were to play something from the Greeks, it would be very hard for you to listen to. It would take you a while to get used to it. It's like if you listen to some of the stuff from the Middle East where they have quarter tones. I know the first time I heard it, it's like it just about curled up in a ball and was, I felt like it sounded to me like scratching your fingers on the nails. Now, once I got used to it, I got a taste for it and I liked it. So if you were to directly bring in some of that ancient music, it would be a little hard for us maybe to get used to it first. And it might even be out of our hearing range because some of the earlier stuff, people are listening clearer audiently. So what I did was I took their mathematical patterns, their sacred geometry that can convert to the music, and I put that in little tones and tuning forks. And I layer all my CDs with a layer of all like these healing blessings from the different ages. Was that clear? Did I make sense?
Sure, that's good. So basically you're saying that as we move through the different ages of history, we're sweeping through a spectrum. We're going up in, there is something that is coloring the age as an aspect that is like a wash, a color wash over the whole tone of the thing. And then it moves up the next tone. So it's going through the cycle of reds and then the cycle of oranges, cycle of et cetera, up through the rainbow, the spectrum. And that figures for the frequency. But it also, you may have also found that, that it's a narrowing spiral. It's a converging spiral, more like
absolutely.
A funnel. And so, you know, what you were saying about the ages of history, you could also say probably about the last 50 years in terms of music, because we've gone from, how much is that dog in the window to, you know, I'm a fire starter.
Yes.
You know, in a very short period of time. And each time, exactly as you said, the music reflected the overall feeling of the time. So yeah, we're spinning around, we're going up the octaves and we're getting smaller. The frequencies are getting higher and higher, and the frequency of the interaction is getting higher and higher. What do you see as how it will continue and what's going next?
Well, okay, well, just two little things I wanted to add with yours, and then I'll answer your question. The first one is that I think right now it's like the cycles are getting shorter and shorter. And I think when you look at the antiquity, the music came before the culture changed. And if you really, and I've done this for all these cultures, it's like the music changes first, then the culture changes. So it's not like the music reflects the culture. I think the music, through resonance. So like if you have a different musical pattern, rhythm and blues, you know, whatever it is, it's going to have some stereotypical rhythm and harmony and melodic patterns. And those things vibrate your brain waves, so they affect your consciousness. Those things also vibrate your emotions, so they affect your emotions. So a whole group of people listening to the same music kind of gets tuned to a certain consciousness that can then give you like the experience. And where this is all going, and I don't know this for sure. I guess everybody gets to make up their own mind. This is my idea.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you've had some experience of how things have moved through history.
Yeah.
So extrapolation is the word of, you know, if things continue, what do you see? What's the possibilities and probabilities of what might happen?
Today, in this era, is a very special time because I've seen these patterns go from like, different patterns in music be based on numbers, and we've gone from 9 to 1, and we've just finished up, in my mind, for the last umpteen thousand years, we went like a sweep through the rainbow. We're now on the age of violet, and I believe it's a new golden age that will be dawning, and that means that we've done a revolution around the great central sun. It's every, 26,000 years. And that what I understand from my understanding of music is that time is very much like music. And I believe it's like harmonics. And what harmonics is like if you have a rock and you drop it in the pond, it makes ripples. And those ripples have a mathematical pattern. So it's like there's a sound and then there's an after vibration. But that has a mathematical pattern. And first, whenever you have a sound, the pattern is that the after sounds are beautiful. They're harmonious. And as they continue, they get less and less harmonious. And then they get really, really rotten. And they get harder and harder to listen to. And then they get excruciatingly terrible to listen to. And then you go right into a new age and you get into harmony. Complete oneness and openness. And I think that is whenever you have every 26,000 years, you have a new golden age. And, but in order to get to a new golden age, it's like there's this period of very difficult frequencies. And I think that's what we're going through now. And I think, again, from my experience with music, I have a set of CDs in which I'm doing cathartic release. I'm pooling out people's stored up negative emotions. And I do that by recreating what I want to pull out, loosening it, and then I use like a positive energy to pull it out. But I think the same thing's happening now with all the difficult to listen to music, heavy metal, lots of examples there. And I believe that it shatters people's etheric bodies, and it's nothing can be hidden with the kind of stuff that we're listening. It's like everybody's garbage is flowing out. And it's not just people. More importantly, it would be like group energies, countries, you know, all their dirty laundry's coming out.
Yeah, well, it certainly is. That's exactly what's happening. And what you're talking about is what we call in the audio industry degradation. The audio degrades, and it then pixelates, which is equivalent to the sound of when you turn up an amplifier, it turns into something called clipping. And that clipping, if it's done with a nice amplifier, it sounds quite pleasant. And then you end up with someone with a nice blues tone, as we had, you know, at B.B. King or something like that. But then you crank it up even further and use transistors, then you get to Jimi Hendrix. And Hendrix was incredibly hard to listen to at the beginning. It was the most discordant thing he could do. You know, Purple Haze comes on with a flattened fifth, with the tritone of music. Now, you know what that is.
Yes.
But according to Shari, it's actually the most healing, but it is the most opposite sound you could have to harmony. So, the beginning of Purple Haze, if you hear that kind of, it really shatters things. It shatters harmony. Although, you know, many people regard Hendrix as an avatar, you know, he's doing the Pluto thing, you know, he's destroying the old. Yeah. And it's very interesting you're talking about the movement of consciousness and civilization. during the you found that the music changes before the civilization. I would put it like this, is that the idea is pushing down into matter. It is involving into matter. And
right.
The musicians are the people who are tuned into the higher levels of consciousness, and drawing from those little trickles that are coming down. So they're tuned into that. So they would feel the new involving energy first. And of course they would be, this is all part of the organism of humanity, and that's what their part to play is that the writers and thinkers and musicians create the atmosphere in which the new society will emerge from. I think you're totally right.
Right. It's like, whoever writes the laws, that's not as powerful as whoever writes the music. And that's an ancient, thing that was taken for granted, but it's kind of like a, eye-opener for us today.
Okay, right. Well, we've got some, we're only into the first half hour and we got three questions already, so that's really good. This is from Wolf Baby. Does Jill have a connection with Eurythmy?
No, I don't.
Okay, because it's a thing that they have at Steiner, which, and it's about expression of syllables through movement. It's very interesting.
No, I don't.
Yeah. This next question is from Michelle. What does the guest think of dance and electronic music and how it impacts on people?
Dance and electronic music, there's two things. One, it has fake harmonics. Of course, most of CD, anything on digital has fake harmonics, which is kind of like pixelized harmonics. So it's kind of the music that helps you to do cathartic release. And so does dance. You know, yoga, really, when you get into those odd, positions, you know, there's stuck old energy in your body, and that's what yoga's doing. By getting in a kind of funny position, you're releasing energy. So dance is in some ways a parallel to music. It's a parallel that you can use dance for cathartic, and the actual movement of dance is actually a vibration. It's a rhythm. And in the ancient times, they would combine the two. Like, for example, they would notice the patterns out in nature. Let's say the Fibonacci series of numbers. Mother Nature loves this. And they would, it equates to geometric shape. If you use the numbers for sound waves, it also equates to sounds. And in ancient times, all scales were simply mocking Mother Nature. Of course, they certainly is not that way now. And then they would do the same thing in dance. They would create the Fibonacci and the sacred geometry, like maybe perhaps draw it on a dance floor. And then they would make sure that their movements were in harmony with the way Mother Earth speaks. The Druids, I heard that with their runes, that there would be healing energy with the sign, again, a sacred geometry sign, and then they would mock that shape with their body to kind of amplify that energy. And again, through resonance, what that simply means, the same note, or a note in another higher or lower octave, that energy transfers. So you can get a feeling, and a higher octave of that might equate to a brainwave. And so the energy would go back and forth between the two. In kind of the same way, in ancient times, they would equate dance with music, and they would have them amplify each other. And today, you know, with our dance, I mean, we're doing kind of free form. We're certainly not taking the time in the mathematics to ensure that we're actually in perfect harmony with Earth. So I would say it's more of a cathartic kind of a release.
So that's a very a lovely attitude, because a lot of healers might be kind of all precious about it and say, oh, you know, but what you're saying is that you can use that very abrasive sound as a kind of scrub for
yes.
certain energies that are stuck and that need to be catharticized. Catharticized? Catharticized? cut the, wiggled out. So that's very interesting because, you know, a lot of healers, like I say, you know, are very precious and all very healing and sound and, well, you mustn't, and you know, you can't, and you all would be very, you know, precious. It's a bit poofy, you know, but because, you know, we have to deal with the real and the gritty and so that's a lovely way of looking at this music because, you know, I play in a rock and roll band. I play Led Zeppelin covers and you know, we do AC/DC and people enjoy themselves. And yes, I think it's a catharsis. Probably my girlfriend's in the audience here and she also comes to, play and she's the one who's dancing around the most. So, it's a real catharsis for her. I think she really enjoys, the interaction of that. A cleansing, yeah.
And sound and music can go both ways. I like to think of it as like having magnetic poles, the positive and negative poles. Now, humans, we tend to make that good and evil, but it doesn't have to be. It can be like north and south, or positive and negative. And so music is not necessarily always blessing. If with the right intent, you can use it for very negative purposes. So someone could use modern music to have a worse mood, to become more coarse. Or you could use it for catharsis. It can go either way. But I also believe that when you look at involution, okay, here's another theory I have. When you look, I'm looking at my research over umpteen thousand years, and I see people involving into matter, they're getting more and more physical. Like, for example, before the times of the Greeks, the ancient Greeks, there were tribes, and people's personalities were associated with the tribes in a way like we would say, oh, this is what a New Yorker's like. This is what someone from Japan's like. You know, and everybody knows exactly what that means. But it was even more so then because there wasn't the flexibility of different vibrations and ideas coming in. So with this, oh, gosh, I'm losing my train of thought now. I went off too far.
Coalescing and condensation of civilization.
No. Dang. Well, okay, I know what I was going to say. Yeah. So people were in groups, and I believe that it was at the time of the Greeks, they started making their music match feelings. So when the old Greek scales were like Ionian, Dorian, and so forth, I just thought of stupid names. But they're actually locations. Like Dorian was an island, and there was people there from Greek that were very stoic. And so they were creating music to kind of balance that stoic personality and the Ionic personality. I mean, it was like a set of emotions that these group of people had. And it's like people weren't prior to that, they weren't often considered as individuals. Like, even in the Bible, I know Moses comes down from talking with God on the hill, comes down, and he's all mad because everybody's worshiping calves, and he particularly gets mad at this one guy, so he kills his whole tribe. I mean, that's thousands of women and children. They all get murdered. And it's like it's at that point in time, they don't see that there's bad or that's wrong because that's a group. You know, people live and die with your group. And so as the sound and music started to differentiate and work on personalities, we became more individuated. And with the different types of music, I also think we became much, much more invested in matter. Like if you can't see it, you can't believe it. And so this is me thinking, okay, why are we doing this? This is a pattern. It's like a train going someplace. And my thought is this. My thought is that as we invest in matter, as we become further from God, further from all these connections with spirit and psychic connections and so forth, as we think we're an individual all by ourselves. I mean, even as a kid, I used to live in my neighbor's home. I don't even know my neighbors now. So the world has changed. We're so much more all on our own. And I was thinking, what's the good of that? Well, the good of that is that we're becoming independent. You know, we're learning to be responsible for ourselves, if nothing else, that we have no one else to blame. And we're learning to take charge of ourselves. And to me, that's the end of the cycle, of this big cycle. Like, we evolve into matter. Why? To take responsibility, to not go with the group flow, to not be in connected with everything in the universe, but to take responsibility and be an individual. And so I perceive that as we go forward, we're going to start to evolve out of matter spiritually. And as we do that, I would think you should be able to listen to these old music patterns and take yourself right back up into connection with all that is. But the thing that we don't lose, the thing that we gain, the beauty, the gem, the diamond in the heap of trash, is that we've learned to be ourselves. And maybe we're gods in training, and this is a necessary step.
We are little droplets in the ocean of God. And I tell you, this is a busy show. We've got questions pouring in. So thank you very much for that. So the next question, actually it's coming from two people, and, is a subject that's been close to my heart. And I will give you three numbers as a guess. 4, 3, 2. Do you, have any feelings about the 432 Hertz conspiracy, as they call it, or, it's something that, you know, I play in my band, and, you know, we tune to 440 because that's the standard. But, I'm worried about my singer's voice. You know, I think we should tune down, but, they've not gone for it yet. But, so what's your feeling, and what, do you have any knowledge about, 432?
Yes, I do. I believe that 432, tuning to that, does open up your heart energy, and that it is better than 440. I believe in the future, though, we're probably not tuning to 440. We're probably, is the Earth going to go up to 444 and so forth? Because that's the pattern. When you look at the tuning patterns. So when you look at, like, say, now and 200-300 years back, you can say, okay, 440, 432. And I would say you're more a little bit more evolved, a little bit more connected with 432. I'd say, yep. But if you go back even further, they're going to tune different again. And it follows a pattern. And you can even, you know, like in ancient China, they're tuning to F, you know, and then you see them tuning to F sharp, and then you see G, and you can see these tuning notes throughout the earth kind of evolve. And I think it takes back to my initial statement about involution, is that I believe that the music, it's like the Pied Piper, you know, the Pied Piper, the music comes in and we children follow it. And as we follow it, we go through all these different experiences, and we learn all these different lessons. We get further and further away from God. We get more and more individualized. We get less connected, and we're standing on our own. And so, yes, I think 432 is better. But in the bigger picture, you can, you know, that's like step one, and there's 100 more steps behind that one. In other words, there's not one particular tone. It's like, think of it, like a rainbow of sounds over time that that we have learned to tune to and harmonize to. I don't know, does that make sense?
Yes, my particular thing about 432 is that it's a Pythagorean number. It's part of the combination of 2 and 3, right? Mm-hmm. Which, mm-hmm. as we know in music, you know, that's the perfect fifth, is mm-hmm. the two-thirds position. You know, you make a stop two-thirds along the way of a vibrating piece of string, and you've got the fifth. Mm-hmm. And by continuing that process, you get you derive our scale. So when you start and you start, here it is what I figured out, Jill, is that carbon with a frequency of 12 represents G in the 432 scale.
Mm-hmm.
And so, and G is, for me, G is a very homely kind of key. It's just like very easy and comfortable. And so, basing that on the carbon atom, that seems to be a kind of, that's like a home position. So I think that the position of a carbon-based life form, would work very well on a 432 hertz scale. Basically, it's the tuning of all the instruments, so, you know, tuned to A equals 432, but also G equals 12.
Mm-hmm. There's all kinds of, sacred geometry in the music. In ancient times, they didn't think that you listened to music and decided what was best. They selected the math, the sacred geometry, just like you were saying, you know, like, you know, this combination, you get these combinations of fifths of whatever. And they were always doing that. They were always looking at the math, and then they would tune the people to the sounds so they would get used to it, so then they would like it. Sherry Edwards, whom we had on last week, which I love, and I have a book about her work, which is tremendous work. Her work is great. She says that the language of the body is math, expressed as frequencies. And that's another thing, too, in getting a little probing deeper into what I said earlier, that throughout the ages, I think the music came first, and then the civilization followed that tonal pattern, that tonal vibration matrix. But below the music is math. In ancient Sumeria, I mean, this is that civilization where I was saying that the ages historians date is anywhere between 10,000 BC to 1,000 BC. I mean, a long time ago. They are, they're looking at counting the cycles per second, and they're looking at the sacred geometry of sounds.
How do they know cycles per second?
I don't know how they do it, but the Chinese were doing it. All of the civilizations were doing it. I'm assuming they had help from Brothers with Stars. All their music is math, all of it, across the globe.
Interesting. So, it comes back full circle. Does it come from the mind? Does it come from the heart? Does it come from the mind? Does it come from the heart? And perhaps that this is another merging of involution and evolution.
Perhaps. Or maybe it's kind of like nature. I mean, because musicians get channeled. Some of my music, a being comes in and plays through me. And I do take credit for it, but really that's kind of like plagiarism, cosmic plagiarism. You know, I mean, I've been given some of my music. And
it's
I know
a cover version.
The classical people. The classical musicians, most of them are given their music. So maybe it's some divine plan, or maybe it's some natural way where we just kind of roll through these different frequencies that we experience, and then from that we grow and we learn. I don't know.
An old girlfriend of mine was into rug making, and she would tell me stories that there was a song that the rug making women would sing. And the song contained the pattern of the rug that they were making.
Another ancient practice.
Isn't it?
Yes, it is. In almost all businesses in ancient times, they would use music and song. Like, you know, the boatmen. And there would be song farming. Or like with the slaves. There were slave calls. They're singing back and forth. And people would use music and songs, and they would be particular to the industry. So the rug making song would be different than the boat building song. But that, they were used to build unity, to build connectivity to the workers, and so they don't slow down, to set like the pace with the rhythm, to have them consciously, active, working, productive.
That's right. Well, I mean, we can look at modern-day supermarkets that have a you know, music coming over the PA speaker, and you know, in the times when things are busy, they want people to move fast, so they play faster music. Hey. So yeah, let's just, I mean, these questions are pouring. I'm a really, really busy now. Brilliant. Okay, back to baby. Could Jill say a bit more about the planets and their vibrations and sounds?
Sure. As a planet moves in its orbit, it makes a frequency. Think of if you had a stick and a string with a ball on it, and you swing that ball around by wiggling the stick, it's going to go bzzz, and that bzzz is going to have a pitch. What is it? You can totally figure out the notes of all the planet or orbits. You can know the notes of planets in their rotations. Just a different frequency. Has a frequency. So, I have the frequencies of all the planets and carbon, hydrogen, oxygen, and nitrogen, because they're the star dust. That's what stars are made of. That's what our bodies are made of. And in ancient times, again, this lens, the brothers from the stars were real, because they would play the stars, and they were accurately playing the frequencies of the stars. They were changing your astrology by the music that they played. So they would know that, you know, the vibration and the rotation of the planets. And then they would, like, if, how to put it this way. Okay, well, I gotta step back for a sec to explain this. Right now, little subtle frequencies come in from outer space. You can buy them off NASA. I know Motorola was selling them for a while. Sherry Edwards used to buy them for like $9.99, and then she would do astrology readings on them. So it's a fact. They're coming in from rotations of planets and so forth, and they change per day. This is astrology. And let's say I have a cold.
You mean that this is astronomy?
That's what I meant. Yes.
Yeah.
Yes,
so I'm interested in this. Where can you get these frequencies?
Well, Sherry Edwards got them from Motorola. I never got them off. I would try her. So anyway, and then I'm in the process of writing a book on musical astrology too. But anyway, that's another point. So anyway, let's say I have a cold, and the frequency that's the same as zinc comes in from one of these planets. My cold gets better. Now let's say you have too much zinc. You've been just OD'ing on zinc supplements. Well, you don't need a zinc frequency. And in fact, it might hurt you. So kind of what hurts you might help me, and vice versa. So to some extent, the frequencies coming in from the planet are individual. And to some extent, there's astrological energies that are going to affect the civilization as a whole. So ancient people would balance out, the troublesome, or when it got the volume or intensity got too much, or a square or a negative astrological thing, they would just, with wave cancellation, they would just eliminate it. And I take my stab at that in my Stardust CD. But that's exactly what they're doing. And then there are Hindu masters, the biggest or only ancient masters of this ancient art alive today. It's in India. It's the Hindu musicians. And Sri Swamiji Ganapathi Sakananda, or if you go to dattapetham.com, like dattapetham.com, you'll see Sri Swamiji for short. And he does that. He does these live concerts, and he charts the astrology, and then he's like an ascended master. He's, you know, he's unbelievable in his powers. And he'll take a crystal, a long crystal, and he'll close his eyes, and he'll look at the audience, and he'll see colors which equate through resonance to notes, to pitches.
and that also equates to illness. And so, like, if he sees a lot of red, he's liable to conclude something like, oh, heart disease, as an example. Whereas with blue, you might have a different major illness in the audience. So he then takes the astrology and the health of the audience and creates music to heal it right on the spot. But that's kind of what they did in ancient times. They would also change the music during the times of the day and during the times of the year. You know, Christmas time feels so much different than 4th of July. And so they would have different frequencies to balance out the 4th of July feeling and to balance out the wintry feeling. And dawn feels so much different than hot noon. So their music changed during the day because they were constantly keeping the listeners in balance. So, and again, that's kind of my theory in my Stardust. It's very beautiful heavenly music with all these star and elemental frequencies. Another thing interesting about the stars and their tones comes from the work of Barbara Hero. And she has a site called lambdoma.com. And she's a cool, cool lady. And one of the things she did with physics was she would look at different star systems and look at their, you know, their orbits and so forth. And then she would come up with their pitches. And it's interesting that the, you know, people who talk about contacts from other planetary beings, you know, it's the Sirians, it's the Pleiades and so forth. But anyway, the systems of worlds that we often hear about usually have a tonal relationship with Earth of a musical fifth. And isn't that interesting?
Okay. We got a breakthrough. We want here's some nice scrubbing, cleansing music from Mike Knight, I hope. And we'll be back in a few minutes. Don't go away. We're going to talk more stuff, about cool stuff. On Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com, on waterspiritradio.com, on noborders.radio.co.uk, and everbeyond.info right there at the bottom. Huh. Anyway, this is JP, and tonight I'm speaking with Jill Madsen. Jill and I have been chewing the fat over some ancient musical information nuggets, and we're going to... we're going to take some callers if that's all right with you in a while.
Mm-hmm.
And we've still got questions to cover many other things to talk about, I think. Because
would it be okay if I just gave two ideas that I was thinking of over break?
Please.
All righty. One was we were talking about whether sound and music can whether it's dissonant, whether it can be cathartic, or whether it could actually make you ingest negative energy. And one of the things I learned from Sherry Edwards is that when your body really needs a frequency, it likes it. And so the music that you like is going to have a lot of specific frequencies that you need. So when you don't like a sound and it sounds awful to you, I would stay away from it. Sound can make you ill. Sound can kill. It can be a weapon. But there are times when you just can't get away from that dripping faucet or the stereo music upstairs, or if you live in a city, you can't get away from annoying sounds. So here would be my advice. My advice would be, if you can get away from it, great. But if you can't, make peace with it. Because I believe that down through the ages, the music has gotten more and more dissonant, and society has learned to harmonize with it, to blend with it. And in, to me, the process of ascension is becoming not just of the light and not just a high frequency, but also becoming very powerful. And so you want your peace and your ease and state of mind to be so much more powerful than that really annoying sound. And so when you hear that annoying sound, I would just recommend to kind of puff up your resolve to be at peace with it. And at very least, it will hurt you less. And to me, that's what ascension is. It's taking all the dissonance and rising above it. So that's harmony, just a little piece of advice.
Lovely. Harmony through conflict. In fact, I've found that reggae music can harmonize all the sounds of the city around it. You know, police cars, they sound perfectly fine against the reggae beat. And I think it's the strong beat is like, this is a frame of time. This is another frame of time. This is another frame of time. We're moving on. Yeah. So the other point.
Okay, the second one is I just wanted to say that I have lots of videos on JillsWingsOfLight.com. If we don't get into a lot of it, going through different histories and different music and contacting with angels and guides with sound. So, and there's free sound healing. I have samples of star sounds by star music, healing flower symphonies for cathartic release and building of positive energy. And, the nature sounds, the Fibonacci and Solfeggio, and when it's in tuning forks, there's a half hour of free music. So I just wanted to make sure people got the free stuff at Jill's Wings of Light.
So say that really slowly. You're saying it really quick. Say it really slowly, Jill.
JillsWingsOfLight.com.
JillsWingsOfLight.com. So this is this is an outlet for, and people can hear your music. They can listen to it and buy it.
Uh huh.
Excellent.
And there's
how many CDs have
you got? Videos and articles.
How many CDs have you got?
Six.
And videos?
Oh, I don't know. There's, 8, 10 or so on there. There's many of them are an hour long.
Okay. And do you have any lectures or anything up on YouTube or anything like that? Do you have a YouTube channel?
Yes, I do. Jill Mattson. And again, the many of the videos on my website are linked to my YouTube channel.
So, Jill's Wings of Light. com and also JillMatson.com, is that right?
Uh-huh.
Excellent. So, I've got Steve. He's bursting to come and join the party. He's very enthusiastic, and he's a musician as well. it's like, oh, pick up the phone, Steve, come on. Come on, Steve, pick up the phone. Where are you? We're ringing. Put your headphones on. Get the microphone. He's fumbling out. I can see he's fumbling around. He's knocked everything over. His headphones were on the floor. There you are. You managed to scramble. Is it on the right way? Steve.
Oh, yes, me.
Steve.
Yes, I'm here. No, my headphones were fine. I was just I was taking a second to answer the the Skype. I had to turn off the radio.
Oh, he's being cool about things, huh? Just I leave it a little time. I like the sound of the Skype ringing. Hiya, Steve. How are you doing, my friend?
I'm fine. You heard that, right?
Yeah. What's that? Is that your guitar?
Yes. I had to tease a little bit because of the about the comment earlier about how you can't listen to heavy metal, which is funny because I listen and play it and get.
Yeah, well, this is what I'm saying. What Jill's actually saying is that everything has its place, and if you like heavy metal, then you need those frequencies.
Right. I wanted to ask Jill actually specifically this. I just played a very, very specific note, which is it is the quintessential sound of heavy metal. It's going all the way back to when it was strictly defined, when Black Sabbath got started, and that's the it's called the diminished fifth, the tritone, which people say is the most evil interval in music, and to the point where like even the church didn't like it back in the day before there was such a thing as heavy metal, which sounds like this.
I was just sick.
By the way, I tuned my guitar to 444 for Jill, because she mentioned that 444 may be the next evolution. So that's what 444 sounds like with lots of distortion.
Would you like me to talk about that interval?
I would love for you to talk about that interval.
Okay. Well, again, I like to understand things by looking at a big bird's eye view. So if you put yourself at the time of the beginnings of the Catholic Church, its competition would be the Greeks, the great Egyptian mysteries, and Sumerian and Babylonian in their ancient wisdom. So these are the religions of the world, and the Druids, all of them have music front and central for access to God and higher beings and connectivity and knowledge, inner knowledge. And all of them use sacred geometry, and they use intervals and music and so forth. And one of the biggest things is phi, which is the interval, which equates to that interval that you were just playing. And phi, phi, phi is so important just because Mother Nature uses it over and over and over again. I mean, it's her native tongue. It's in a butterfly. It's in the sky. It's in your body. It's in a tree, everywhere. She's very repetitive. And people believed that they needed to, like, you know, have their feet grounded into the earth and their head into the sky. So it was very important to them to be in tune with nature and to play her songs. So if you sum it up, this would be the Druids, the Sumerians, the Egyptians, and the Greeks. They're all saying one of the most important musical tones is phi. And the Sumerians, by the way, their whole mass systems kind of, their whole music system was kind of like based on phi. And so what do the Catholic Church do? They say, oh, music of the devil, don't use it. It's kind of like squashing out the competition. And I don't think that they really totally knew what they're doing. It's interesting that they came up with the solfeggio scale, or they reintroduced it, I should say, because the solfeggio scale was well known in Egypt, and the Jewish, the ancient mysteries were well aware of the solfeggio. The solfeggio tone, entirely different than phi, it's this incredible matrix of these numbers 3, 6, and 9. There's like 18 that I found. And they would play these sounds, and it's kind of like if you had an etch-a-sketch and you had two knobs on it, and one would be phi and the other would be solfeggio. And phi, you know how like in an etch-a-sketch, one knob, that little toy, makes a curve and you can draw with it, and then the other knob makes a straight line? The solfeggio would make the straight line. The phi would make the curve. So these would be two kind of tools for creating the matter. But anyway, the church outlawed phi. That was a good way of just getting rid of people that were loyal to the Druid, to the Celtic, to the you know, all the other religions at the time, and make them the dominant religion. And since you weren't allowed to play phi, which is kind of tricky because it's in most scales, well, could be in many scales, they came up with the solfeggio scale, which has healing benefits. But the unique thing about the solfeggio scale is that it's phi-less. It's crafted very well to always avoid the sound of phi, which could be equated with making a curve or a form in matter. And I don't think it's evil at all. I think it's a sound of nature. And another thing, let me tell you about phi. Well, let's not quite five, close to five. You can look at tones, like if you were to put the musical scale on a color wheel, and so red would be C, and then, you know, as you go to your next color, you go up a note. Okay, so then you would, if you would note that complementary colors on a color wheel are directly opposite, so red's always opposite green, and so forth. And if you look at the number of cycles per second of the light of red and the light versus green, you'll find that they cancel each other out. And so if complementary colors cancel each other out or balance each other, then you can also put tones on top and see which tones balance each other out. Now, someplace near phi, very close to phi, you get the tone that cancels things out. And let me show you an application of this. I think it would be around 1940s, the Dr. Royal Rife in the United States, he was using an extraordinary microscope, I guess a special crystal, so he could see more than the doctors of his time. and he was looking at live blood, not a sample. So before, when I was talking about Joel Sternheimer, the physicist from France that was looking at
Jill, sorry, sorry to interrupt you. Could you, again, back the microphone off a little bit? Okay. We're still getting your breath. Or just point it just above your mouth.
Okay, is that better?
Yeah, you can speak up now.
Okay, sorry. So Joel Sternheimer, who was watching under microscope cells breathe and measuring how much they breathe, you can figure out the frequency of it. I believe that this is what Royal Rife was doing. He's looking at a cancer cell, and he's watching it breathe so he can see what is that cancer cell's frequency exactly. And then you would play simply the complementary frequency, or like let's say it was 10 cycles per second, so you play 1 over 10 cycles per second. And then you cancel it out, and Royal Rife and his followers wrote that he was curing 800 out of 800 cases of cancer, and that he was also ruined by the AMA. They also wrote that. But so in other words, the thing that's kind of neat about phi and pitches close to phi in that area is that you're getting in the range of being able to cancel or balance other frequencies. So it has a really powerful application. Think of it as an antidote to perhaps a disease. It could be used that way. So I think phi has a lot of good things, and the Catholic Church outlawed it as a political move, is my opinion.
Mm. So what is that feeling then? Like that cord is kind of putting you through, because it's definitely a noticeable tone that, you know, that, like, you know, people like me, I dig that, because it comes off as strange and it's got a dark connotation to it. Maybe that's just because of the intention that the Catholic Church kind of put behind it, you know, like calling witches evil, you know, which is furthest thing from the truth. Like, what is that, what's going on there? What's that tone doing to you that's causing you to feel the way that you do when you hear it?
Well, I don't know for sure, but I do know this, let me see how to put this. What the ancient Greeks doing is that each one of their scales, Ionian, Dorian, and they have all those other Hyperborean kind of functional names.
Yeah, Phrygian.
If you look at each scale and you look at where they're placing phi, which is your interval that you're talking about, they place it in different places in the scale. And it's kind of neat. They're almost equating it to the solids, the Platonic solids, these different scales as well. And so they're moving phi, each scale, they put phi in a different location, and the purpose of their musical scales was to balance and harmonize difficulties and personalities. The Greek music was all about developing individual emotions and helping people balance their individual emotional traits.
Interesting.
And they were moving phi to accomplish that. And Richard Marek, he's got this great book, and it's free. It's called Interference. It's at interference.com. Fabulous book. And he was suggesting that if you think of the skull of your head as a drum, and when you have different frequencies going in your brain, depending on the size of the shape of your skull would be how you would get wave interference. Because like if you had a long skull, you know, your waves are going to bounce off your skull different than if you had more of a tall kind of a skull. And he's suggesting that depending on where phi goes and how it bounces off the shape of your skull, that that's going to create your different personalities. I don't know. It's a cool idea. Free book, and it's wonderful.
I got a big head, so I wonder what's happening to me when music's going between my ears.
I don't know. Is that helpful?
That's incredibly helpful. That was wonderful. Thank you. I suppose I should get going now.
Okay.
Thanks very much, Steve. So all there's right. Steve Travesty, guitarist, singer, bass player, and general program producer. Thanks very much, Steve.
Got it.
So, Jill, thank you for taking that call. If anybody else wants to come in, you can call in through the Freedom Slips number, which I can never remember, so I've got it written down here somewhere in several weeks ago. There we go. I found it. It's area code 310-421-4053, or you can always go to Freedom Screen 2 on Skype, which is better. Skype has got a much better sound than the telephone. So, Jill, have you had any insights over the last few minutes?
No, but one of the things I didn't mention was my Healing Flower Symphonies. And what I did there, I think this is kind of a cool idea, is I was studying the Greeks and how they were using frequencies for cathartic release, and how their idea was that they would build the strength of their country by building the virtue or the personality of their citizens and their children. And they were doing that by controlling what music they listened to, and they would... Anyway, it was all in a music and cathartic release and building up a virtue. And so in my flower symphonies, I was thinking my girlfriend was into the flower essences and they worked for me. And I always thought that was kind of cool. And what I found when I got the frequency of the flower essences, that they were the same as the emotion that the flower was to cure. In other words, it's like saying a daisy makes you feel cheerful, because they're the same frequency, whereas a rose might make you feel beautiful because they also are the same frequency. So in the Healing Flower Symphonies, what I've done is like for impatience, that's a remedy. I get the frequency of the remedy, which is the same as taking it. You ingest sound. It becomes part of your very being. So anyway, I have the frequency of the flower essence, and then I go into like music sounding like impatience. And then I go into music sounding like patience. So it's kind of like a ghost. Think of it like a little ghosty hand sneaking in your body, you know, taking the guck and shaking it up and trying to pull it out, and then go riding into the virtue of patience. So I don't know. It's, my whole thing is up with music that blesses and can change people live just by playing or listening or having it in the background. I have another one called Deep Wave Beauty. And in that one, my idea is beauty. And if you feel beautiful, you kind of emulate beauty, even if you're not physically beautiful. So the beauty is more than skin deep. It's actually when you feel beauty, you project beauty. So I have beautiful music. And then I put in frequencies of vitamins and collagen and the muscles in your face and neck. Again, this is just my ideas here, but if you were to pull the muscles of your face and neck off and string a violin, now wouldn't that be gross? But anyway, of course, the longer one...
I'm sure there's some artist that's going to do that. Now that you've given them the idea, there's some artist, you know, every year in art school, there's one of them, and they're the dead meat artists, and they take...
The long ones are going to have a low pitch, and the high ones are going to have a high pitch. So anyway... As you age, they get longer. They sag. So you can tune things up with sounds. So I'm tuning up the muscles in your face and neck.
Okay. You know, have you tuned up the
sound
muscles?
Sound spot.
What about the little kind of turkey thing that you get? This is what I suffer from. That's why I grow a beard. That little kind of turkey piece of fat underneath the chin. It never goes away. What's that all about?
I don't know, but I do have the youthful straight frequencies of muscles in your face and neck. So I don't know.
That's awesome. So basically, you can get a sonic tune-up just by listening to your CDs.
That's my mission in life, is not only to do that, but to introduce to the world, pay attention to what you're listening to. You're ingesting. You wouldn't go into a hospital and just randomly start taking meds. But really, you ingest sound. Now, you don't, in fairness, you have to ingest a lot of sound. You ingest it in very small doses. So for, you know, really to make like a physical difference in your appearance, you need to listen to it a lot. And I've had people that just loop it in the background, and it makes a difference. But they've also listened to it a lot. But think of this. You know, if you splash water on a rock, does the rock change? Well, no, duh. But if you look at the Grand Canyon, and you can see the canyon carved by the water over time, you see the power of continuous force. And that's what sound is. It's 24/7. And so we can select sound, like you can use sound. Sherry comes up with sounds to get rid of the latest flu, which, again, she's using the wave cancellation kind of idea. And you can use sound to strengthen your muscles. You can use sound for almost everything. And then in some of my earlier CDs, like the Paint Your Souls and Stardust, I'm using ancient techniques where they would tie into closer to God, into heavenly energy. Why not? Why not pay attention to what you're listening to?
It's a very, very important thing to make sure that what you're listening to is what you need and want to listen to. I know, in a way, you know, people say, oh yeah, you cut off from the society if you're wearing a Walkman. You know, remember the Walkman. I still call them a Walkman. It's the same thing, MP3 player, whatever. I used to really annoy people walking around with the headphones on my head, listening to a radio show, just going about my chores. You know, I don't need to listen to the sound of washing up. I can listen to. So we can choose our sonic atmosphere, and it's a very creative of environment, the sound of it. You know, you have a room and there's smoke in it. There's nothing there, you know, it's just a smoky room. But you put some music on and suddenly that room becomes mystical.
Yeah.
You then add lights and then you've got a psychedelic room, you know. So it's all about the sonic atmosphere. I always find that it doesn't matter how big your TV screen is when you watch a film, it does matter how big the speakers are.
Yeah.
And it's more than that. It's not just entertainment. You ingest sound. You become your sounds.
Yeah, because that's what we are. So I have more. Wolf Baby was saying that there are dances that go with each flower essence. So I wonder if the people who do the dances of the flower essences would get hold of the dances, the sounds of your symphonies and performance. Wouldn't that be cool?
I haven't heard about that.
Yeah. Okay, so here's from Michelle in Studio B on Rebel Radio. What about animals, sound and vibration? I have a cat, for example, whose purr I have used to calm anxiety. What is happening there, do you think?
Again, I don't know for sure, but I assume that the sound
C-sharp.
Of a purr is very...
C-sharp.
Some people, if it's a C-sharp for every animal, then some people are going to need C-sharp more than other people. You see, we each have a fundamental frequency, and the way you get that, if you were to add everything, like your eye blinks, your fight last night, the sound of your heart beating, the composite frequencies of your liver, everybody's going to have a composite frequency. In humanity's like the rainbow. You know, we have all these composite frequencies. So therefore, I'm going to have, like, I have a lot of G, but I'm always seeking out D because that's my complementary color. So some people are going to, if all purrs are C-sharp, some people are going to need that more than others. But the actual purr, I can't imagine that being anything but healing.
I often wonder if the purr of the cat is tuned to the owner or the companion. Because cats don't like own. You can't own a cat, really.
Yes.
The only thing you do.
Cats have staff.
Yeah, that's right. that they, you know, they reward you with this little sound that they make. Oh, I like cats. I really do. I much prefer them to dogs, but I still think they're evil. They're heartless.
You know, the ancient Hindu, they used to use, they've done their healing music not so much by focusing on pitch and harmony, but focusing on rhythm. And one of the things they've done for their healing music, and they can heal anything with their sounds, again, you have to listen to it a lot, but they would copy animal sounds like the clip-clop of a camel, or the sound, or if, you know, like if you're slow and having troubles going, you know, they'd have you listen, you know, to the galloping of a horse. And they would recreate those rhythms of animal patterns to, kind of transfer that same kind of energy, to the listener. And kind of in a likewise way, the ancient Egyptians did something similar too. This is kind of funky. Remember, let's put it this way. Shapes make sound because, you know, there's waves, wave interference, and, you know, air and so forth would, is going to have a different wave pattern, like in a square room versus a long room. And in my secret sounds book, I even list the different dimensions of the room and what one sound is going to be louder in that room because of the wave interference. And so there's different sounds created by different shapes. Sherry Edwards can hear them. Like she can hear the sound of like, of a cross, for example. So anyway, what the ancient Egyptians were aware of this. And their way of healing, they would incorporate shapes. So like, I imagine building pyramids, I don't know, rocks fall on your head or something, they would get a lot of concussions. And they have medical papyri, so you can read what they were doing. So if you had a cracked skull, one of the remedies was that your head was always next to an ostrich egg, because the ostrich egg is the same shape as your skull. And then it gives off a very slight, subtle frequency. And they were healing from the frequency of that whole, healthy egg shape. They were healing your skull through resonance.
Structural resonance, yes.
I don't know, kind of cool.
Structural resonance, yes, indeed. So by having something that holds the pattern of that solid, strong, round thing, that your skull then entrains upon the thing using the law of similarities. Interesting. So we've got more questions. God, they're turning out. Right, okay. So, all right, here's another one from the baby. There we go. The other day someone posted on Facebook the sound of a fracking flare. Most annoying sound ever. Any thoughts?
Wow, I've never heard the sound of a fracking flare. But again, with annoying sounds, sounds can harm, sounds can kill. To get an idea of the power of sound, around the turn of the century, right after World War II, in France, a Dr. Gavrand was hired by the French government to make, I think it was robotics weapons. And they had a fan that wasn't mounted properly. And it was making just a slight annoying sound. And it was making everybody sick to their stomach. And I guess they spent weeks trying to figure out what it was according to our way of thinking about science. And they finally figured out it was the sound. And then they, you know, light bulb went on, they have a contract to make weapons. They started making sound weapons. One of them was they made a 6-foot police whistle. And when they blew it off, the technician died. And upon autopsy, his organs had jellied. They had another one that was crumbling tanks and weaponry. One of the problems with it was that they couldn't target the sound. The sound kind of went in a broad sweep. So be respectful of sound. If sound really, I don't know what it sounds like, but if it's really nasty, I would get away from it. If you're forced and you can't get away from it, again, back to my earlier advice, what you want to do is you want to make peace with it. You don't want to add your and yucky feelings to the mix, because that will intensify it. You want to overcome that sound and harmonize with it by keeping peace within your body.
Yeah, dance to it.
Yeah, there you go.
Imagine it's just like one long bass line.
Yeah, or cathartic release.
Yeah, yeah. In fact, we get vibrations. Well, I personally get vibrations, and my body kind of sort of jerks and vibrates at times. You know, the other week we were doing a healing, and this started happening. My right hand starts like circling, as if I was drawing a circle with my fingertips in the air, but really quite quickly. You know, so about like that. I what's going on? As this healing energy was pouring through, and somebody else in the healing group was saying, yeah, that was also happening to me. Their hand was just kind of whizzing around. When we move, I believe that dancing actually is a way of making sound, because we make rhythmic moves with our body. We're making low frequency sound, aren't we?
Yes.
We're a big loudspeaker. I mean, if we were making the same kind of things as a loudspeaker, we'd be like a 4-foot loudspeaker with the surface area that we have if we dance around. You dance around like a nutter? Well.
In some of the research coming out, particularly like from physicist Robert Becker, he believes that it's the subtle, soft frequencies, like an inaudible sound coming from dance, or the inaudible sounds coming from space, or geomagnetic, like what's going on with the molten core underneath, or the crystals in your soil deep down, that those very subtle frequencies impact our consciousness the most. And his reasoning for that is that he equates your nervous system with like a digital sound transfer. And it averages harmonics, and it gets, it's like the internet, it gets a lot of data quickly. But he says that those little subtle sounds, like from dance, that that they travel cell to cell, transfer through your body, and it's kind of like listening to analog music. Anyway, his books say that they're the ones that influence our consciousness the most. So he's saying soft and subtle is very powerful.
So the dancer, the belly dancer dancing before the king, can influence the way the king thinks. Yes?
Yes.
Uh-huh. Subtle what do they call it? Non-lethal weapons. So where are we going? What have we got here? Sound Callan, where are we? So if you listen to this is from Michelle in Revolution chat room. So if you listen to the same music all the time and you continue to repeat problematic patterns in your life, perhaps one should consider changing their music.
Yes.
Wow. Interesting insight, thank you.
Yes.
Ah, look, and here we have one of the, this is Modius, he's, from Holland, and he says he used to tour theatres with a laptop performance where dancers' movements were converted to sounds.
Oh, that's beautiful.
Yeah. Awesome.
There was a man in the United States in the 20s, I believe. His name was Daryl Clarence Miller. And he came up with this thing called a phonodex that, in essence, he was able to photograph vowel sounds. And then he could photograph the shape of, let's say, sound coming from a violin versus that of a trumpet. And what's different between vowel sounds and a violin versus a trumpet is the harmonic pattern. It's the after ripple. And he had little devices that he was, and this is in the 1920s, imagine what we could do today. He was able to take someone's profile and convert it with math and his little machines to sound, so you could listen to someone's profile, and then you could listen to someone's profile and take the math and his little machines and create, you could go back and forth. So there's many ways to go back from sound to visualization to movement, all those kind of things, and they interact, and this is the wisdom of the ancients. The ancients said everything's energy.
So if you look at in terms of wave interference, in terms of entrainment and resonance, you're going to learn the secrets of the universe. I like to think of like resonance, like you have a violin here and you have a G string. Naughty, naughty. But you have a G string over here and you have a G string on the violin over here. If you play one violin, it's the other violin's same pitch is going to sound. So I like to think of like a gerbil tunnel, like a porthole, if you will, between the same notes. So if you think of each frequency as like having a porthole, it communicates with everything else of the same frequency. It's like, it's a whole new way of looking at the world. It's world. It's like everything is related. And you can relate it to resonance and entrainment.
Resonance and entrainment. So, entrainment is a very, I like that, is a very interesting concept because, this is where, for instance, now, here's something. If ever I get the chance as a musician to play with an African player, and you know that also counts as like white South Africans as well. You know, anybody's like come from the continent has an incredibly strong magnetic pulse, and playing music with them is easy because they've got like a built-in. It's like a click track. They have a click track, and so the sense of rhythm is more than a sense. It's like a broadcast.
Mm. That's interesting because the Indians, which aren't that far away, all of their healing music is all based on rhythm. It's very complex rhythm. It's they might have like, you know, we have like primarily 2 beats or 4 beats and then we have 3 beats. So it's almost like we have even an odd beats, you know, like bum 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 or bum 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 bum. We almost have like 2 patterns and a handful of variations.
Yeah.
But in the Hindus, they have hundreds. So, you know, you can have a beat pattern to go for 128 beats. They're very complex. And they kind of use, they use rhythms for sculpting almost like everything. It's really very, very advanced use of rhythms for healing. It's cool.
It's like fractal mathematics. The way I always, whenever I have a tune that I'm trying to remember, or I'm trying to play a solo or something like that, I kind of make a syllabic poem in my mind. I don't count. this is what confuses the players who play with me, is that I don't count. I read poems. So instead
of, that's beautiful.
And so, you know, people have all these weird time signatures. So instead of going, oh, that's 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3, 4, I go, that's, beep, dop, beep, bop, deep, dop, boop, deep, 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 da, da, you know, and it's like, you get the poetic structure of it, and it's just the same. So, and then, living in Scotland, you know, you were aware of all these jigs and reels, and they've all got they've got a unique pattern and structure. And it was a long time before I actually learned that they were songs and that people learned the tunes by learning the poems. They learned the songs when they were children. They don't do the words anymore. They just play the tunes. And that was the secret of Scottish music for me. It's like, ah, that's how you do it. And I'll never be able to do that. Because wow. It's all to do with the verbal syllabism of it all. Did I just say that? Anyway, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Well, then that album almost takes a segue into, I'm just thinking of another thing, you know, the ancient Egyptians, they were making an art of the sounds in your voice. So they would take the different syllables, like ah, and like that resonates near your chest, e resonates in your forehead and higher in your body, ooh, low in your body. And that's what they were doing, these priests. I mean, there's a ton of them, over 3,000 years. And they would study the impact of different syllables and where it hits your body just by paying attention to smaller and smaller feelings or smaller and smaller sounds. And so they were mapping the impact of each little syllable or glyph. And that's what hermetic magic is. It's not silly kids playing abracadabra. Their magic words were customized sounds for healing and balancing or canceling out something in someone's body.
Yes.
Kind of
yes.
A cool thing.
Yeah. It's almost like, you know, when you go to a supermarket and there are like these, or you go to a hardware store and there's a great big item. So instead of blipping the scanner on the item itself, they have a little book and they have all the things. All right, that one. Beep. And that's the barcode for that item. So, we have a series of glyphs that represent those frequencies which stimulate parts of our brain, specific parts of our brain. Each of those glyphs resonates at a particular part of your brain, which is a particular frequency.
I like that. So then you're barcoding it when you're counting your rhythm.
Yep. Yeah, well, I mean, barcoding is essentially a form of music to communicate with the computer between, like, pigment and data.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Cool.
Yeah. Meanwhile, this discussion, says Michelle, has made me think about how unhealthy hospitals are in terms of being a place of healing. Telling me, not, you know, yeah, what do you think?
I would definitely agree. I mean, there's so many ways to heal, and they're just using chemicals, and they're most of them are ignoring the oral, they're ignoring the fragrance, they're ignoring, you know, oils, they're ignoring, even feeling homey. It's like the world is in color and they're painting in black and white. They're missing the color. They're missing a lot.
Yeah, you know, although I've done a bit of hospital software work, I really don't like going there. I much prefer working at home and doing the thing there. I find they're very unhealthy places. And
Edgar Cayce, that famous psychic in the United States, he projects that the future medicine will be frequency and sounds. So he was, I don't know, what's the 30s, maybe 1930s? He's predicting that the cheapest, most effective medicine's going to be, you know, buying a CD for something. Isn't that a cool idea?
Yeah, or even getting somebody to sing their own note. Can do it for absolutely free. Just go to the toilet or the bathroom. Go to the bathroom, close the door, lock it, and go, ooh, until you feel it in your body where it hurts, and then just hold that note, and then you'll be healed. You know,
or
you can go to Jill, and she will give you much, much more personal attention. That's if you want attention rather than the healing. However, you have to pay money for that kind of attention, but I'm sure it's very well spent. So, I'm sorry, Jill, you were just about to say something.
Yeah, I was going to say that reminds me of a very ancient technique. It's called Sounds of Silence. It was in every mystery school across the globe that I found. And what they would do is that they would get a silent spot and listen to little sounds within their ears. And, you know, when I first started it, I started hearing sounds like crickets. And then years later, it went to ocean sounds. And then I've done bells and birds and it's just, I've gone through this huge laundry list, and the ancient mystery school said that on your path to ascension, as you evolve, that these little tones in your ears are going to evolve. And they say once you go through the gamut of them, and they list them, they list about 15, 20. One of them's even bagpipes for you Scottish people. But anyways, as you listen to these sounds, then when you come to ascension, it's the absence of sound. And if you switch over from the ancient mysticism and into somewhat science with Sherry Edwards, she has, what she hears when she hears sounds out of people is that she hears little tiny sounds coming out of their ears. This has been proven. They can now record them and tell you what they are. And in fact, They use these little sounds coming out of your ears for babies and comatose people because they can diagnose what's wrong with the person by the sounds, which is exactly what Sherry does. And so I like to think of it as these little tiny sounds that come out of your ear. It's like a radio station. And let's say your body needs F sharp and D, which could equate to a herb, a food, or something like that, because that's what that would be, the resonant frequency of that herb or food. Or you could listen to it. The body's broadcasting to the rest of the body what it needs. And so if you'd like to just go into silence, like these ancient people suggested, and listen for these little sounds, they're high-pitched, sounding like maybe a high-pitched TV sound, like a nervous sound. In fact, John Bulio of Biosonic says that it is the sound of your nerves. But at any rate, if you can get into the space where you can hear that sound, if you sing it, like as close as you can to sing it, that's the sound that your body needs to heal, and that's right on target, perfectly individualized, a powerful healing. And if you sing it for long enough, the little ringing in your ears will stop because you don't need any more. You're full. You're healed.
So, why can't we have a device like a pair of headphones you slip on, it determines your frequency, it gives you the frequency or converts that to a Bluetooth signal that is then played on the loudspeakers, and the walls change color to the frequency that you need, and perfumes of the appropriate frequency are pumped into the room. Why can't we do that?
The ancient Buddhists did something like that. They would have healing rooms, like they would have a blue room, and with color healing, pretty much anything like blue is sedating. So like if you're over anxious, you would go in the blue room, and you would eat blue food, you'd wear blue clothes, everything's blue. And then you'd stay there for a while to be healed. The lore says that this was done also in the pyramids. And then let's say you're depressed, they would do the same kind of a thing in their way, is that they, I don't know, somehow they would try to make things red or somehow
orange.
Like red.
Yeah. Forced to wear orange. Hang on, that's the Guantanamo.
And so, you know, and then the food you would eat would be orange, and everything you would see would be orange, and maybe they'd be playing the name D that equates with orange. So in ancient times, they actually did what you just said in their way.
So, I mean, let's go back to this is what we're calling the, Shari calls it the otoacoustic emission. I've been fascinated by this thing because forever I have had these high-pitched sounds. I mean, we're talking 10 to 12 kilohertz frequency sounds that I hear all the time, louder than everything.
Do they change in pitch?
I mean, it's not like I don't notice them changing key or anything.
They become louder and stronger at different times?
Maybe.
Okay.
But I'd really like to be able to record them to prove to other people that's what I can hear.
That's what I hear, and that's what I was talking about with the sounds of silence. And tinnitus, which is somewhat similar, it's the same pitch and it never varies intensity. Like I know if I get really relaxed and I'm feeling pretty good, they might go away from me, or sometimes they even come at those times. I don't know. But they come and go in volume and intensity. And that's different than in tinnitus. And that's exactly what I'm talking about. It's kind of like your body's way of tuning you up. And if you really listen, it's not a tone, but if you listen in between the cracks, there's tones underneath. And then there's tones underneath. And I think the more healing you get out of it, is the more you can pay attention to it, which it amplifies its sound. And then you can hear, like, in between the sounds. And you'll find there's, like, a whole nother world below. And I think the further you go deep, the deeper you go, the more powerful it is.
So that's awesome. Wouldn't it be cool if you could go to a concert I mean, this is similar to what that Indian guy you were talking about. You could go to a concert, and as you went in, you went through a sonic chamber that was silent, and it would pick up your autoacoustic emission and register it in a big database so that they would know exactly what colors to play.
Yes. This is Swamiji that was doing those concerts. Does come to Europe.
All right.
If you get on that data Pitham, you can see his schedule. He was just in Sweden not long ago.
All right. Well, anyway, I mean, why not have loads of people doing this and in doing it in different ways and in doing it in terms of dance, in terms of, I mean, I'm sure a lot of people would be interested in having more of a, you know, these seventh grade children would be much more interested in dance, a dance night, you know, like a rave kind of thing. That's how they take information these days. You know, you stick a rave backing track and you can put anything you like, you know. You have some very deep esoteric teachings with some rave music, and they'll go for it. Anyway. Oh, they'll take it. Oh, yes. But this has been a fascinating conversation, Jill. I'm really pleased to have made contact with you, and we managed to get your mic working and coming through clearly, and it's lovely.
I love to talk about the power sound, and remind everybody go to Jill's Wings of Light and get the free sound healing music.
So, list out all of the websites and all of your channels, or whatever you want, or your email address, or if you want people to give you money or buy things, how do they do that?
Jill I. Matson, MATTSON, at yahoo.com is my email. And my website is jillswingsoflight.com. And I have one just for the Deep Wave Beauty. It's musicforbeauty.com. And along, if you download the free sound healing MP3s, I have a sound healing newsletter. If you kind of like the stuff we are chatting about, every 2 weeks I come out with like a page to your inbox on healing with sound. Kind of stuff we were talking about.
Awesome. Awesome. Mm. So, Jill Madsen, jillswingsoflight.com. The little tunie will be starting any second now. It's been a real pleasure and a delight, and I hope you've gotten something out of this. We've enjoyed having you this afternoon, and I hope you'll maybe one day come back and continue more with your discoveries and insights. It's really timely. Everything that you've said today kind of locks all the other things that we're learning. It's part of it. We're all doing like an online course that we don't know that we've subscribed to, and we don't know that we don't know what the topic is, and we certainly don't know when the exam might be. But we're all online. We're all taking the online course. There we go. Thank you very much. Journeys with JP will continue next week. I'll be also on Wolf Spirit Radio on Sunday with Ever Beyond. God bless you all. I love you. I'm sorry. Please forgive me. Thank you.